Russ Wagner of Jigalchi, performed at AudioFeed, and tonight he's here for a talk with The Antidote. Thanks for coming, Russ.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Thanks for having me.
I have to admit that I know absolutely nothing about the background of Jigalchi. How did the band come together?
Well, there's a pretty good story there that relates to the band name. So our guitarist, Andrew, and Scott, our keyboardist slash horn player, they actually met teaching in Korea. And the name comes from a fish market in Korea that they used to go to. And apparently it was a pretty wild place. And I think there was a lot of soju that got drank there by these guys. And because of them teaching together, they randomly met and became friends. And that's the only reason I knew about the town of Goshen, Indiana to begin with. Me and Andrew go way back. And then because Andrew had met Scott randomly teaching in Korea, fast forward many years, in 2020, mid-pandemic, we started this project and started working things out. So Andrew and I both lived in Michigan at the time. I have since moved to Goshen because that's where our home base is, and I found myself coming here a lot. Yeah, after a while, I started to consider, well, what if I didn't commute for practice all the time, and what if this just became a thing? And now I've been living in Goshen for 3 years, and it's all because these two guys had this strange and wonderful experience teaching overseas.
How many bands closed up during COVID? You guys started it then. That's a rarity.
Yeah, and it definitely was born out of a lot of frustration and lack of outlet at the time, you know, when everything shut down. It's not news to anybody that artists were, you know, having a tough time. But yeah, we wanted to figure out something to do, and all of our other outlets kind of fizzled, and no one knew if there was any way of even performing live anytime soon or again at all. Because of that, we found at least the safest way that we could at the time, when we had a pretty large room to practice in where we could be masked up and many, many feet away from each other. Mm-hmm. And because we had this resource of this practice space, I think that's really why the whole thing took off to begin with. We were pretty glad to have it.
Well, you and I tried to connect during the AutoFeed Festival, but we were both tied up. You know, something about festivals, I always find them to be fun, but, you know, it's sort of like controlled chaos. What about you guys? Do you enjoy doing them, or is a club show better?
You know, that's a great question, because I think that we will probably gladly play any festival that anyone asks us to do. Don't get me wrong. I mean, we also have this goal since we started. Jigalchi wants to play Bonnaroo, and it's a really silly thing to say, but we're trying to manifest it.
And absolutely. Why not want to play Bonnaroo?
This is a radio show that's going to go out there to a lot of cities. I feel like this is the best time to throw it out there that we want to get booked to Bonnaroo. But tangent aside, I love playing festivals. There is a chaos to it. You're not wrong. AudioFeed is one of the most well-run experiences, though. It's so streamlined, and I really appreciate them for that. We've done it 2 years now. But yeah, there is the element of you're going to miss a lot of your friends that you want to see, you know, unless you're staying there all 4 days, and you're not going to catch a lot of things. We also just generally have a shorter set when we play a festival, and it's been funny with this band. We have really gotten into, you know, having the opportunity to stretch out a bit more, and we've had plenty of shows now where we've been the only entertainment for the night, so we were playing an hour, 2 hour sets.
Wow.
And it's honestly a blast. I've gotten kind of used to it and fairly spoiled in that regard. So coming from a background of playing a lot of 20, 25 minute punk shows, to jump back into that and play a set that's only about a, you know, half hour, I feel like I'm sort of just getting warmed up at that point, and I want to stay on that stage. But we write a lot of very long songs that are influenced by our interest in post-rock and our background in that. And we have a tendency to be long-winded and improvise, certainly more energetic, upbeat. But, you know, like on the album we put out, we had to separate one song into four movements because it runs about 24 minutes, I think. So if we, there are sometimes sets where if we're playing that, then that's what we're playing, or we're playing one song aside from that. And you know, it's honestly nice for us to be able to stretch out. We also, there's a lot of us playing multiple instruments and switching over mid-set and doing other things. It's nice when we have some time to work more of that in. So we have three guitar songs. So we have all these moving pieces that it is fun to explore when we get the chance. And so, you know, we always look forward to that. But when you're playing a festival, yeah, you got to try to be tight, you know, unless you were a headliner and you get the long set, you're probably shooting for about 30 minutes, you know.
Well, you know what? Why don't we get into the album that you've been talking about? Now There Are Only Stories is the debut release from Chigalchi. The title's accurate because there are portions of short stories being read on each song. You gotta admit, that's unusual. The thing is, could it also be distracting?
Ooh, distracting. Perhaps. Why would you say it's distracting?
Because it's taking away from the music itself, or is it adding to it?
I love this. I do feel like it is certainly additive, but you make a really good point there, because there's part of me that wanted to incorporate more of that sampled element, and that's actually a big part of my role in the band. I'm the one who playing keyboards, but also incorporating all of the sampled elements. All of that is stuff that I curated and trigger live. But yeah, it's something that it takes up space. It, you know, sometimes we need that to be loud enough in the PA to hear. And sometimes that means, you know, asking the other guys to play quieter or what have you, because this element is a bit more delicate at times than other things. And it also decidedly not musical in nature, you know, in the most widely accepted sense. But yeah, I think that it is something that you have to pick and choose where it goes, how much of it you utilize. But we wanted to tell a story, and the initial idea was that this was going to be an instrumental band. Now, we did eventually start incorporating some vocal song elements courtesy of Scott. Again, you know, a multi-instrumentalist who contributes a lot of things in the project. And I think there's going to be more of that as we come up. But yeah, we wanted to be a bit non-traditional in our approach, telling a story in a somewhat vague sense through multiple voices. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to do it through different means, you know, the song element, the spoken word element, different narratives. You know, a lot of the samples on the album are original short stories written by a friend, but we've also compiled a couple others from published authors that people would know, and were, you know, also read by a couple different people. So trying to source different voices, different mediums. And yeah, it's a bit of a balancing act, but I think it's something that sets us apart. You know, I've seen other bands do something similar for sure, so it's not a wholly original idea that I could claim by any means. I have had some very, very positive comments from people who tell me a lot of times they don't catch exactly what is being said or the full meaning of it, but it still elicits an emotional reaction, whatever they can grasp in that moment. And I really like hearing that. I'm really glad that you can move people, and there is something, you know, about the human voice that's going to connect with people no matter what, in a way that fully instrumental music won't really with most people.
I get you with that. You know, there's something else that makes Jigalji stand out, and that's your music style. I mean, for sure it's post-rock, but then you throw in horns for almost a bit of a ska feel on songs like Before the Hunters Become the Hunted, and at other times there's a touch of jazz. So that really will help make you stand out from the crowd.
Yeah, absolutely. We've gotten the ska comparison a couple times, and it's always a little surprising, but I think it's all pretty welcome. I definitely associate ska with being a more fun genre of music versus post-rock.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when we approached this originally, the concept was a bit more of a introspective downer post-rock band, at least in my mind. And I think that's kind of the world that I know Andrew and I come from. We've been fairly involved in post-rock scene. And then, you know, come to realize in practice, this band live is actually pretty fun. And people seem to have a good time and move around. And it's kind of funny to try to capture those two things in my mind, because I truly love both. And I love the downer, thought-provoking post-rock, and I love whipping a crowd into a frenzy. So it's kind of really lovely surprise that we kind of have been able to capture both of those.
You guys just do it all.
Trying to.
Now, you've already mentioned about the other players in the band. So how do the songs come together? Like, who starts the process?
So all of the material is originated with Andrew, our guitarist. He writes all the ideas, and he's someone who spends a lot of time playing music on his own. And I think there are musicians like that who spend a lot of time writing by themselves. And I know I'm truthfully not really geared like that. I don't spend a lot of time writing outside of writing space.
Mm-hmm.
So he's able to originate all these ideas, and we can all kind of iterate on them. And you know, I feel like what I end up doing goes on top of all that. You know, we really generally start with him bringing the ideas to the table, and Nick, our bassist, and Tyrese, you know, they lock in and figure out how to coalesce these things into the basic, you know, 3-instrument rock setup.
Mm-hmm.
That forms the core, forms like a lot of the real energy of the band. He throws out all these ideas that end up being mathy and wild and tempo shift all over the place, and you know, it's what comes naturally to him. And it's always really hard for me to write to, so it's great that we have a rock solid bassist and drummer who figured that out and helped me start to realize, like, oh, okay, the one is here. All right, now I can start to figure out what I do on top of that.
I want to bring in another song. When I saw the title of Opacity and Pestilence 1, the plague years of the 80s, it reminded me of the plague of cicadas that was supposed to hit Indiana and Illinois. Now, did that actually happen?
I don't know about you, but I feel like every year people are talking about a plague of cicadas that's supposed to pop up, and it delivers to some extent, but is never as intense as it might seem. I don't know enough about, is it entomology? Is that the study about?
Okay, so to be serious about it, what about telling us about the song? I mean, both the music part of it and the short story. How do they relate?
So, yeah, again, that gets into what my contribution to the band is. I'm the one that concepted the song titles, and I'm probably the only one who could tell you what song titles are, because we only just refer to them as numbers when we're talking about what songs we're going to play. And so I'm doing all of that story work on top. I got to really flex the long-winded post-rock thing on that song title. We got multiple titles. You know, you get Roman numerals in there. You get couple big $5 words. It's fun. I love a lot of music that incorporates those things. And as indulgent as it can be, I think that seeing music that does that sort of thing has always been really inspiring to me. Has really invoked something in my mind, and that's what I want to do. I want to communicate. There are bigger ideas at play of paucity and pestilence. It relates to this idea of living in a world with more lack. As we move into a future that looks increasingly scary, I wanted to envision what that looks like on this possible timeline where people are living their more mundane moments of life, but in a world that looks very different from how it is now. The whole idea is exploring what things are like if we continue to boil this gift we have been given here. But not from this big, grandiose standpoint, but just from what your everyday life looks like as a person living through that. And the plague years of the 80s, the sample that is read in that first passage of the song is taken from the book The Lathe of Heaven by Ursula K. Le Guin. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I read that book as recommended by my friend Carolyn, who wrote all of the original narrative stuff that appears on the album. So this is all happening in 2020 when we were first kind of conceiving the band, and all of these things came together in this moment. It was a time when I just had to read the writing on the wall. But all of these things were happening in the same moment, and I couldn't help but feel it was all connected and tied together to tell a story better than I could ever tell myself. Yeah, I read this book after she was kind enough to show me some of her own original writing, and I really liked this one particular passage from the Ursula K. Le Guin book. And what was interesting about it in particular is there's a bit going on in the book of time being distorted, and the nature of the album looks at the future, but obviously references this scenario in the 1980s where we experience plague in this country. And I kind of love the idea of telling a story that is perhaps a bit disconnected from a conventional timeline and maybe appearing in different timelines perhaps. But, you know, all of that is, again, just me dropping little ideas and hoping that people will interpret them as they will.
You spoke about the timeline of being in the past. What's the future looking like for Jigalchi?
Well, we have a lot of other material written. So at this moment, we have most of the next album written, which is great because, you know, we just put out Now There Are Only Stories 3 months ago, and we're hoping to have the next one recorded at least before the end of the year. It took us a while to get that first one out, so we're hoping that we're able to follow it up a bit more quickly than, you know, it took the initial record to get out there. So we're finishing that up, recording hopefully sometime in the next few months at the latest, and putting it out, honestly, just as soon as we can. And, you know, also lining up a lot of shows wherever we can. We just got off this tour going down to Audio Feed, and we only did, 3 days on the road, but boy, it felt really good. And everything was just so positive about the whole experience, all the shows all together and all the connections we made. So we're working on lining up some more of those, you know, in shorter 3-day runs if we can. You know, if we can do longer, great, but we're all in different places. There's always some hurdles, but, you know, we keep it going no matter what. And we're lining up as much as we can. It's great because, truthfully, you know, we're just still working on getting out of debt for the first album. So we're trying to make some money wherever we can and get out there and play to people, you know, as often as possible.
The good thing is, it sounds like you've got it on the fast track. And I got to thank you, Russ, for coming to The Antidote for this talk about Chagalchi.
Thank you, Dave. I couldn't be more thrilled to have this conversation with you. Thank you so much.